Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. Very happy to be joined by one of the leading experts in biosolids. I'm with Dr. Sally Brown from the University of Washington. She's in the School of Environmental and Forest Sciences. Sally, thank you so much for joining Words on Water.
Thanks, Travis, for asking me.
Yeah, so you have a really incredible career researching and studying biosolids. Why have you focused so much of your work on them?
If people can understand the value in biosolids, it's a long way to having us understand the importance of a sustainable society. Biosolids don't look great on paper, but they work amazingly well with plants, and the benefits associated with their use goes well beyond your garden.
How did you kind of get started researching biosolids? I mean, I think maybe you began studying soils in general, or kind of how did your path begin?
Well, actually, I went to a liberal arts college and came out with a degree in political science and a desire to learn how to do something with my hands. And I worked in restaurants in New York City as a chef for many years. And then decided it would be great if you could get locally grown produce when in season at those restaurants. And so started a produce company delivering locally grown fruits, vegetables, way back before locavore was a term, from Long Island to New York. And from there decided there had to be a way to connect the city to the farmland around it and a way that the two could strengthen each other. Now that's called the circular economy, but back then it was called How Do I Do This? And BioCycle magazine, I found out all of a sudden that something happens when you flush the toilet. It doesn't just go down and away. If you're lucky, it goes someplace and that something is produced. And so I ended up from the vegetable business applying to grad schools and specifically having the goal of wanting to work with biosolids to tie agriculture around the city, now called peri-urban agriculture, to the cities in the center. Wow. And I was with Rufus Cheney, who is a famous, and deservedly so, figure in biosolids.
And then you ended up, from being in New York City to being out west, all the way on the west coast there in Seattle at some point.
See, biosolids is a very, very fertile material. I met my husband, Chuck Henry, through my work and his work with municipal biosolids. Oh, so wow. There you have it.
That's it. There's a lot of benefits of biosolids, and I'm happy to have you kind of rattle them off. But what do you find, what have you found through the years, through your research, to be the most, just interesting and most important benefits?
What I love is how the yuck factor combines with the, oh my God, this stuff is amazing factor. That's my favorite. I see that a lot with home gardeners. I really enjoy it when municipalities embrace the fact that their stuff comes from poop and don't shy away from it. I'm a scientist. I do a lot with science communication. And that connection between your waste feeding the soil so it can feed you, so you can make more waste to feed the soil, to feed you more, is just such a nice teaching tool, obvious one. People get it. And when they get it, they embrace it.
Hmm. That was not the benefit I expected to hear from you. I expected to hear something more about the soil health or whatever it might be. But you really are kind of think it's impactful, the revelation that people have. Or kind of on one hand, they think the stuff's disgusting and then they realize the power that it has and the benefits that it has. And so that revelation is what you find to be pretty incredible, huh?
I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yes, I can go on and you can find any number of scientists that can go on about enhanced rates of carbon accumulation in soils amended with biosolids, and that the potential for mineral, the iron and aluminum oxides within the biosolids matrix to protect the carbon, to restrict mineralization potential, blah, 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 blah. I can do that. And that's there. That's real. But for me, watching the people and seeing the broccoli go ballistic is the best part.
I know you've done research into kind of more the more innovative uses. What are some of the more innovative ways to use biosolids, either in practice, you know, what's actually happening out there, or in potential, what theoretically could be a great way to use them?
So one of the things we've been focusing a lot on are urban uses for biosolids. The cities that make them have a pretty high potential to use them within the city. And it's only now that you're starting to see that whole understanding take hold. We've been focusing research-wise on stormwater is one example. So all of a sudden, with combined sewer overflows being a concern, one of the deals with climate change is you get very intense rain events. And we had a major CSO in the Puget Sound when a big rain event and a bunch of other snafu factors disabled a treatment plant. But it also works in a city if instead of asphalt all over the place, you make certain soils sort of hypercharged to be able to accept rainwater. And that's the basis for green infrastructure. And it makes a city look beautiful because instead of expanding your engineered infrastructure or putting down more pipes, you plant trees and have bioswales and rain gardens. And how cool would it be if you could use those same biosolids from the wastewater plant as a component of that green infrastructure? So we've been looking at different biosolids composts and seeing how they would work as part of green stormwater infrastructure. We've done this with biosolids from Seattle and Tacoma and San Francisco and Washington, D.C., and I believe Bloom in D.C. is using some of their material as a stormwater mix. There's potential. We're working with King County on that as well. So
you're kind of at the research stage right now, working with some utilities and working with some different products to kind of see what the impact would be.
Yep. Another thing we've been working on is working on developing really nice biosolids blends. When you get a class A material, it's great, but it doesn't mean that it's ready to hit the Target superstore, or the Home Depot. Class A means pathogen free. It doesn't mean you want to hold it in your hands or put it on your rose bush. So, if you take that class A and blend it with different materials, Tagro in Tacoma has been the leader on that for decades, but other cities are starting to do that. Vancouver, BC is now making a soil blend. I had a former student of mine, Ryan Bajica, is now at San Francisco Biosolids working on developing a similar sort of thing. Chicago is composting now, but the whole notion of making biosolids as a component of a product is a really nice idea to me. And then you can make one of the things we've been working on in Seattle, because Washington State is, you know, not the most innovative, but certainly one of the most innovative, Colorado, California, whole country of Canada, is cannabis-based growing material. So developing products specifically to grow cannabis. Why not put a green cross on your bag and charge double?
What about the biosolids is productive for growing cannabis?
What about the biosolids is productive for growing corn? What about the biosolids is productive for growing tomatoes? Has all the nutrients, has carbon, has a really great impact on soil texture, soil physical properties. It you know, the things that make it work for every other crop also make it work for weed.
Gotcha. It's very interesting. What types of research do you think are needed to shed more light on biosolids, more light on their benefits. So obviously, you've got a couple different areas of research going. What do you think could be next, or what do you see happening around the country in terms of research that's exciting and that will be valuable?
So on a nerd level, on a real research scientist level, one project we're working on is the relationship between use of amendments and soil health. And you see USDA doing this on some long-term biosolids research sites, dryland wheat in Colorado and dryland wheat in Washington State. We're doing this with urban sites and seeing how that relates to plant health. Does it improve the trace nutrient status of plants? Does it improve different phytochemicals? Do you get higher yield? You know, so there are nerd research things or more removed from immediate application research things. But I think we've had decades and decades of research on biosolids, and I don't mean to put me and other scientists out of business, but I think a lot of it is now making products that are consumer friendly. So not just the one farmer 100 miles away can understand why he wants this stuff, but everybody who flushes can understand why they want a bag of this stuff.
Yeah. On that note, and kind of tying back to what you mentioned earlier, where do you think public perception stands on biosolids? There's also public awareness, like people even knowing about it and knowing what it is. But what's just kind of your assessment in general of that, the public knowing that biosolids exists and their perception of it if they do?
I think it's very region specific. I think if you're in an area where your wastewater treatment facility, the biosolids program has made an effort, you get much greater awareness, you get much greater acceptance. And in other cases where the municipalities have shied away from that, the opposite is true. In every case, you will always be able to find an opponent, but we have too often as an industry let ourselves be driven by that opponent, as opposed to the vast majority of people who say, oh, okay. One thing where I live in King County, they did a step and it was so simple and it was brilliant in its simplicity. And you think, why didn't people do this? Why are they the only ones that thought of this? They branded their biosolids. It's called Loop.
Good
the
name.
Trucks... And the tagline is turn your dirt around. Mm. And the whole program embraces the logo. The trucks have pretty pictures on them. The website for Loop has great videos that make you want some. This is a program that's the vast majority is Class B material. But people more and more understand Loop. Because this information is presented. If you go to a typical municipality to their website, the lead line about their biosolids program is why biosolids are safe. And it's dense with text and this and that. And you fall asleep in the first 2 minutes if you're not terrified by why are they telling me first off it's safe. Something's got to be wrong if they're telling me it's safe. You want something like Loop, where it's beautiful and they're bragging about it. And then your eye is caught, your interest is caught. So the other way you can increase awareness is to have a material that's available to the vast majority of people in your treatment plant, in your district. So if you have a Class A that's readily available and marketed for that home gardener, they're going to know what it is. Everybody in Tacoma knows Tagro. They take pride in their Tagro. They ran out this year. They were out of material for a month. And the program manager got a call from one guy on the city council screaming at him that, you know, their first responsibility is to make sure that there's enough Tagro for the constituents in the city. And what are they doing running out? So I suggested that every new person to move into the water district there should get a signing bonus and a free bag of Tagro.
There you go. Good. I love it. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you know, Milorganite, right? That's like the longest running thing. And I they talk about how they can't provide it everywhere. It's so popular, right?
Yeah.
They have a limited amount that they can produce. And
yeah.
It was just great being a water person and knowing all this and being in a Lowe's and having someone coming up to the counter and asking them where their Milorganite is and why don't they carry it and they really need to get it. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, a friend of mine in New York can't get anything but Milorganite. She had I got her a source of biosolids compost, and she was so excited and was going to the wholesaler with her Subaru Baja and loading up, and they stopped carrying it, and she was devastated. So,
yeah. I know that one of the things that the public worries about, is the idea of contaminants in biosolids, right? And I'm just wondering, if you could explain to folks what the research shows about the presence and transport of contaminants in biosolids.
So this is one thing that is always there. There's always going to be a new contaminant of concern. And we look back fondly on the days when people were worried about metals. And that's how I started worrying about cadmium. Ended up using biosolids to bind metals, not to be a source of metals. So these days, most of the contaminants are from people's homes. That goes with the pharmaceuticals and personal care products. That's also very much the case for PFAS and related compounds. So the scientists in some ways have done a disservice because they'll get much higher impact factor publication, a better journal if you have the sky is falling approach. Doesn't get you very far to say, if you breathe deep in your own home, it's a lot worse for you in terms of this compound than if you go to a field where biosolids were applied 2 weeks ago. So one of our issues is how to best communicate that. Because the scientific research is important. It establishes whether or not we should be using these products in the first place. And biosolids and wastewater in general is a way that these products get moved from your home into the environment in general. So one thing that we've done, and we have a recent paper out on this, is how to talk about pharmaceuticals and personal care products. So if you take your, what we did for this project was to take a daily home exposure, what's normal in your house, and put it into the context of a biosolids application site. And how much exposure to biosolids would you have to get the equivalent of a daily home dose. And we used a lot of products that have name recognition. And so I don't remember if it was Tylenol or Advil or ibuprofen, but one of those very normal pain relief medications, you would basically have to eat about 30 wet tons of biosolids to get the equivalent of 2 tablets.
Wow.
And if you put it in that context, people get it. And it's a way to make them not so afraid.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Risk communication is a very difficult area, right? You're communicating.
It doesn't have to be.
Hmm. I like that. I agree. I think that if people hear, the average person hears that there is a contaminant in something, then it must pose a threat, right?
People don't get the difference between when they hear 80, they hear 80. Mm-hmm. They don't understand or easily distinguish between parts per million, per billion, per trillion, per thousand, per 100%. And I'm a scientist, parts per trillion is very hard to even get an inkling of what that really means.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of our job is to figure out how to express these things in terms that people get.
Well, let's turn to the contaminant of the day here with PFAS getting so much attention and getting increasing attention in the area of wastewater and biosolids. I'm sure you've seen things happening around the country.
Yep.
In Maine and Vermont and
yep.
Wisconsin and what's your general take on this issue of PFAS and biosolids and what the science shows you?
So, it's exhausting. I'm an old lady now. I'm sick of this nonsense. So to put it one way, I have a dog. And periodically she'll eat something that died a few weeks before, and she gets the upset stomach. So when it was time to replace the carpet in our house, we got the Stainmaster. My concerns about now PFAS and PFOA, the two original long chain compounds that people were very concerned about, have been phased out. But there are other very similar compounds, shorter chain, and they're still being used. For me, having the stained Ease dog puke carpet, I was willing to take the PFAS risk.
Mm-hmm.
With biosolids, as is the case with these emerging contaminants that we've seen in the last 15 or 20 years, the primary source, aside from very specialized cases like Decatur, Alabama, is your home. The primary exposure pathway is your home. If you look at home products that have these and related compounds in them, I've read that dental floss is one of them. And the concentrations in dental floss in this article I saw were same order of magnitude as in biosolids. So think of that. Where is your exposure pathway? Is it the stuff that you floss your teeth with every day? Or is it the biosolids?
And maybe the same level is in biosolids, but those biosolids are being put out on the land somewhere, and then, you know, it's not like
diluted by the soil, and how are they going to hurt you?
Right.
The stuff in your rain jacket that can have PFAS in it, your carpet, your Teflon fry pan. There was an article fairly recently looking at women's blood concentrations of these and related compounds in California and looking at linked behaviors or factors that would potentially explain this. Eating contaminated seafood was one. Using nonstick cookware was a big one. Water, which is considered the primary path of concern for biosolids, so leaching from biosolids amended soils into drinking or groundwater, was also a source, but was a much less significant source. And if you look at the literature on that, your point sources for PFAS-contaminated water tend to be military bases or other areas where firefighting foams have been used.
No, absolutely. You're a scientist, not a policy advocate necessarily, but what are your impressions of how states are beginning to require all of this testing or restricting of a land application of biosolids?
We have a model in the Northwest, and it's one I think that everybody should replicate. We have the Northwest Biosolids Management Association gets money from a range of municipalities as members, and a lot of that funding is devoted to research. The research addresses concerns. It largely in this region also addresses benefits. We have a lot of long-term field sites, but one of the things that research also does is it trains graduate students. It trains them about biosolids. I've had a number of grad students over the years who have gone on to work in our Department of Ecology who does the regulations. So we have a regulatory community who have seen wastewater plants, who have worked with biosolids, who have understood how the whole system works. And that means in our region that you're seeing regulation. You're seeing concerns about appropriate application rate to meet the nitrogen demands of the crop. You're seeing appropriate setbacks to prevent water contamination with those nutrients. But you're not seeing the bans that are really not based on science. In many cases, some of these bans, like if you look at the PFAS in Maine and Vermont, that's not based on a realistic risk or a realistic pathway. And the regulators that are coming up with these regulations in many cases are trying really hard to do the right thing with the tools they've been given. But if they don't understand pathways, if they don't understand soils, if they don't have the appropriate training, they're trying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's causing everybody more headaches, more... It's not achieving the desired goal.
Sure.
It's making things worse. Unintentionally, but it's making things worse. So I think it's another thing that we need to do as an industry is make sure that the people that are involved in the industry, directly, indirectly, regulators, end users, understand what they're working with. And that makes it better for everybody.
It makes sense that a professor would tout education as a good way to go forward on this situation.
Well, if you're working with a regulator, in many cases, these guys have never been to a treatment plant, never been to a land application site, are not trained in soils.
Sure.
It's hard to get it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, the last question I have, I think you touched on a little bit, and that's about really the telling this story to the public. We're in a bit of a difficult moment with PFAS and everything. What do you think the water sector can do better as far as telling the public about the benefits and about the science?
You can have something that people can touch. You can recognize and celebrate where it comes from. Be proud of your product.
Mm.
And make a product to be proud of and that's used properly. If you have a smelly product that's thrown away, essentially, to the lowest bidder, people get that.
Mm.
If you have something that you would use in your own garden, that's your first step.
Sure. Well, Sally, thank you very much for the time. Thank you for the perspective. Really good stuff. I appreciate it. And I look forward to continue to follow the research out there.
Thank you.
Words on Water.